Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Oddcast the Podcast, or A World Empowered Dialogues. Here at A World Empowered, we have a philanthropic vision. We have a vision of the world where all women, men, and children are empowered. Empowered to speak their truth, empowered to be themselves, empowered to provide for their needs, and protect and heal the environment. Every week we bring in inspiring guests and thought leaders, founders of nonprofits around the globe, to share a message of hope and to inoculate people with the belief that they can make a difference. To share their stories of struggle and trauma and where they've come from and what they've decided to create and contribute to the world. We're adults here having adult conversations, so often there's adult language involved, but we want to thank you for being a part of this and for sharing the message and for tuning in. So get ready for another inspiring conversation with another thought leader and get ready to get odd. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Oddcast the Podcast. I'm BC, your host, with today's empowering message. I get to sit down with my friend Leah Huggins. I printed out her, or tried to print out her bio last night, and my printer did printer things and printed 5 pages of nothing. So I'm going to let Leah introduce herself. Who are you? Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I apparently break printers.
I break printers. I break all things technology. So it's not your fault.
It happens. I mean, I feel like I'm all things. I'm a mom first, and that's my full-time gig. I love people to the core. I am creative beyond what I even know what to do with it. Like, I have so many ideas that if you hang out with me long enough, I will like pretty much impose a business on you.
Sign me up. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I've been starting businesses since I'm 11, so I'm all in on that.
Yeah. So I feel like all things creative, all things heart, all things inspiration, with a mission of love. I mean, that's kind of my bio, but of course I'm real too. I have real emotions in between there, but that's my principle.
So you're not one of these people that pretends they've got it all figured out.
Oh gosh, no.
You're the guru and everybody should come to you for all the answers.
No, I actually think people should have more than one person they look up to. I think when you invest into somebody or you look up to them, I think they should just be a stepping stone to that next discovery. I don't think one person should ever be the answer.
It's just part of that growth process, one rung up the ladder, right?
Yes.
I hope our audio is okay. We're in a smaller room today than we're used to. So we're getting a little bit of the feedback from the people next to us. And I'm going to adjust this curtain. Forgive the live stream. We're a little washed out.
Oh, that's better. That's better.
Yeah. Much better. Well, you are the author of my new favorite book, Imagine a World. It's absolutely gorgeous. And for those of you that have been following me for a long time and you're familiar with The Dream Achiever, you'll understand why Leah and I are kindred spirits. This book is absolutely gorgeous. I'm going to read from you the back page. It says, Imagine a World Full of Wonder by Leah Huggins and Heather Lean is a masterful children's picture book illustrated by 21 artists from different backgrounds from around the world. A true testament to the power of art and creativity, the stunning illustrations use different mediums of art and a lyrical text to celebrate unique creative expression and serve as a reminder of what makes this world beautiful. So I absolutely love this book. It is truly gorgeous. The artists that you found in this are stunning, and the message that you share, I mean, take a look at some of these illustrations and the message. I would like you to share, as I flip through the pages, a little bit of what your journey was like, how you decided to become an author and what that was like for you.
Sure. So this is actually my 5th published book.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My first one, it's a little bit of a long story.
Want the whole story.
Okay. All right. So
give us the background.
I'm going to give you the whole the whole beginning.
Yes, please.
So when my little boy turned one, my firstborn, I wanted to do something special. And since I really love to do crafts and things that are memorable, I crocheted this little tiny mouse and I took pictures of it around our house. And I called like Squeak, Squeak, Squeaker the mouse, who's been squeaking in this old house. And I did this cute little book. Nothing fancy. I did it on Shutterfly, printed a copy, and then we did a whole mouse-themed birthday party for his first birthday. We put a mouse on the cake. I did mouse decorations. And like a week after his birthday party, we found out we had an entire mouse infestation in our basement.
Great.
Like,
and you're like, I've been celebrating life so much. Now what do I do with this family?
Right. Yeah. So it was gross. It was just, you know, they're not really great house guests. Let's just be real.
I hear the hantavirus is kind of a bad thing.
Yeah.
And then you're in a moral quandary, right? Like, what do I do with this family of mice?
It is hard.
We're going to try to relocate them.
I know. If I could just, you know, do the power of like relocation, that would be great. But we did set mouse traps.
Can I tell you a funny story? I don't mean to digress.
No, you're fine.
My friend Elena, she's an absolutely wonderful person. Her husband left on vacation and they live out in the country with a massive prairie dog problem.
Yeah.
And she knew that when her husband came back from his, it wasn't vacation, it was a business trip. When he came back, he was going to poison and shoot the prairie dogs. Right. And she's like, no, when it's not happening.
Yeah.
So she literally was like, you guys need to move.
Yes.
Because when you get back, when he gets back, you guys are all gone. When by the time he got back from his trip, all the prairie dogs were in their neighbor's yard. They just by like intending and asking them to, funny tangent.
The power of thought and suggestion, and it's all real. It is.
Energy and communication and it transfers to all living beings.
Yeah. Well, so
sorry to derail our conversation.
I wish I had that knowledge back then that I could just like ask the mice to leave, but we unfortunately
yeah,
we did. I think
you had to move them.
We collected like 26 mice.
That is an infestation.
It was terrible.
I was thinking like 5 or 6.
No, it was so much, so gross. So, anyways, we like had somebody babysit my kiddo. My husband and I got like hazmat suits to go into the basement and just like clean up, throw away stuff. I mean, it was so gross. And I'll never forget my husband like looking at me as we're cleaning and sifting through all this mouse crap. And he's like, so did you know about the mice or did you manifest them? Like, what was the whole like, oh, I'm going to write this innocent mouse book and all of a sudden mice are going to appear. And I'm like, oh, babe, I know. I'm so sorry. And he goes, I just have one request. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, can your next book be about the lottery?
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, sure, right? Like,
I didn't know about the mice, but they may have come here in attraction.
Yeah. So I have never wrote a book about a mouse again. That was, you know, done, sealed, delivered. But fast forward 6 years, I get, you know, pregnant with another son. And I have this beautiful little boy and he's about to turn one. And I wanted to do something meaningful and special for him. Right. So at this point, because creativity kind of just expands, I was over my crochet. Mm-hmm. Right. So I was like, just in a different realm of ideas. And I sat down with that memory of the mouse and the lottery and wanting to do something special. And I wrote The Love Lottery.
Hmm.
So that's the best one.
I haven't read that one yet.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You
have to share it with me after.
Yeah. So I wrote The Love Lottery and then I shared it with my husband and he was like, babe, this is so good. And I was like, are you just saying that? Like
you're biased.
Yeah. It's just because you love me. And he was like, no, I think it's really good. And so when you don't know what to do, you just do the next thing that you know how. Mm-hmm. And I had reached out to a super talented gal that used to be my neighbor in my old neighborhood. She lived behind me and a couple doors down, Melanie Darling. And she was so, so talented and so artistically like just creative. And we had sewn together. I knew that she did drawings and art. And I was like, hey, Melanie, do you want to be an illustrator for this book? I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm going to learn along the way. I don't even know what to pay you. Like, we'll figure all this out. And she said, yes. And we started this beautiful process. And I ran a Kickstarter. I launched it into the world. I was successful enough to get my first print run paid for. And then once you have a physical copy of something, you can mail it to people. It's, you know, you can put it in boutiques. You can do all the things. And then I sent it to a tiny little publisher that had just started online. It was, they found a niche market beyond brick and mortar to just go directly from like advertising to the consumer. And so they picked up Love Lottery. And then I wrote three additional books for them that they just acquired into their titles. And then we actually pitched Imagine a World to them, and they had no idea how to advertise it. They were like, it's so complex and so unique and so, like, we don't know how to formulate the words around how to pitch this to people, because it's like more, it's a conversation,
right?
More than it is just
a story.
A story.
It's, and it's so broad, like the message in this, kind of like the Dream Achiever, the message in this appeals to such a wide audience that it's really hard, especially for like publishing houses, to narrow a demographic. Say we're focusing on 6 to 12 year olds or blah, blah, blah. I could see why that would be a challenge, because the book really does appeal to all generations, not just children.
I agree. So we kind of, we got denied, right? I think when you're doing anything, you have moments of failure mixed in with moments of success, and it's just what you focus on. And so our denial of this actually launched us into another Kickstarter. Okay. So we were successful with another Kickstarter, even more so than I was the Love Lottery. And we got these books printed. We loved on our Kickstarter people. And then we sent it to a distributor. We got picked up by a distributor. And now things are just moving in different ways. It's like sometimes success looks like
failure.
Failure. And it also looks like, man, I don't even remember all the things I did to get to this point. But here I am.
All the moving pieces that had to orchestrate just perfectly for us to wind up where we're meant to be. What did it feel like? Because you said that you had three different titles published with that company?
Four.
Four different titles. So what did it feel like after having four published titles with this company to be rejected? What did that feel like?
That maybe we were going down a wrong path, right? It makes you question a lot of things. It makes you take a step back like, man, I really loved this. I felt so called to it. And I'm going to kind of backtrack. One of the things that connected us when you did your Dream Achiever that we talked about is it woke you up in the middle of the night. You were inspired. A poem came to you and you just knew you had to get up and write it down and get pen to paper and make it a thing.
Right.
Well, this was same kind of principle, right? I woke up in the middle of the night. This is during COVID. So during, you know, 2020 shutdown. And I had this vision of like, how do you bring people together in such a disconnected world? And I came up with the idea of like, what if we hired all these different illustrators to do their own page? And you bring this community together. You bring this book of intentionality and purpose. And I had this whole vision and I was so excited. I pitch it to my husband. And of course, sometimes I feel like you always have like a dreamer and a logical one in a relationship. And I tend to wear the dreamer shoes.
The logical one, AKA the pessimist.
I mean, he's pretty great on a lot of things, but he sees, you know, what is this going to cost me kind of mentality at some point.
Or the viability. What's the realistic viability? How can this actually work? What are the logistics to bringing it to fruition?
And it's,
those are handy people to have.
They are, you know,
if we're a kite, we need something tethering us to reality.
Oh, he tethers me. I'm pretty sure I'd fly away a long time ago. But anyways, he was kind of like, babe, that seems like it'd be really expensive and hard to do. And I was like, okay, I mean, and so you kind of get a little deflated sometimes when people don't see your vision, right?
Right.
Especially when it's the first time you pitch it to somebody and you don't get that, woohoo matched excitement, it's like, oh. So then, because I'm very creative.
Hold on, that thought.
No.
So did you find that to be the naysayers and the detractors at that stage, did you find it more discouraging given that you had had prior success? Because early, yeah. If we're creating something from scratch and we've never done it, and it's never been done.
Yeah.
It's easy to be like, you just don't see it.
Yeah.
If you've had a little bit of success, or in your case, a lot with 4 published books.
Yeah.
And then people are like, this isn't it. Like, this isn't in your wheelhouse. This isn't going to work. It's not what you're, what's the word I'm looking for? Aptitude, whatever.
Yeah.
Did it hurt more? Was it more discouraging at that stage to have people be like, I don't see it. I don't like it. I don't think it's going to work. Or was it harder in the beginning when you were just getting started?
I mean, success is definitely a journey. So even though I got picked up by a publisher and they had published these things, it was a smaller publisher and I knew there was going to be growing pains, right? Like doing anything new. So it's not like you just walk into abundance. It builds over time, right? So I, you know, was making 50 cents a soft cover and $1 a hard cover. Mm. So even though I'm so crazy thankful for the thousands of books that got out and got placed into the hands and hearts of children, it wasn't like all of a sudden I had this huge bank account ready to fund my next project. So
Oprah didn't pitch it.
No, not yet. Come on, Oprah.
Yeah, hook us up, Oprah. We've got 2 amazing books here.
Yeah, I know.
Oprah's book club.
Hey, you never know. You never know. Anything's
or
possible.
Ellen or.
Yeah, yeah. But.
So more discouraging or less?
I think when you're committed, you just don't hear no.
Right.
So
you have made the decision.
I think it always feels more discouraging up front before you've gone into motion. Mm-hmm. But once you've already gotten into motion, you just detour, right? So
pivot.
You pivot.
Okay.
Yeah. You pivot completely. So what happened was I took my husband's no, not right now. I don't see that vision. And I pitched it to my co-author, Heather, who was also this brilliant, beautiful soul that had gone through her whole publishing journey. And we decided to co-author together, which split the cost of the illustrators. It made it tangible. It made it affordable. And honestly, I couldn't have done it without her. With the way that we worked together and the healing and the cheerleading and all the things that have come after that have truly been the best. Gift. So
what was it about the synergy of that relationship that helped propel you to the next level?
I mean, I think so Heather and I have both had very different journeys. I talked about the fun and the light journey of the mouse and celebrating kids and doing all that. But there's always layers to all of our stories. So there's a hard journey interwoven in there.
Okay.
And I went through a really hard time. A really hard time in the middle of our move and finding out I was pregnant. There was a lot of layers of chaos and sadness and hard and stress and worry and the darks, right? Like the, I call it like the dark day of the soul, but it felt like a dark couple years. Yeah. I was like, I don't know who coined it a day. It just felt like a long time.
A dark night.
And writing the Love Lottery and going into motion and becoming my creative being again was actually a huge part of my healing process.
Why?
Because it's an outlet of emotion. And I think sometimes when you stagnate emotion or you just marinate on it, it becomes poison. It becomes poison to your thoughts, to your actions, to your body, to your soul. And I think all my sadness actually did accumulate into a very sad time. And then I ended up getting bladder cancer. Hmm. And when you get the cancer word anytime, no matter what phase of life, it just makes you view life differently. Yeah.
Puts the brakes on everything.
Yeah. So my mission of love became, I want to leave something for my kids. And I'm going to do everything I can to leave as much heart and pieces of me for them.
Where were you in the love lottery when you got that diagnosis?
So in 2020, I was diagnosed with cancer.
Okay. Had the love lottery already been printed, published?
It had already been in motion.
Gotcha.
So, but then I started writing more.
Okay.
Right? So like it fueled my passion. It fueled my fire. It gave me something to leave for my kids. And so when I connected with Heather, you know, she shared her very vulnerable story, and she wrote Angel Grandma and Angel Grandpa after losing her mom. And it was a healing journey for hers. So okay. It was similar, but different paths. Right. So
they're mirror images.
Yeah,
definitely connected. I want to delve more deeply into this, how creative expression helped pull you out of that dark night of the soul. I've often said that creativity is our soul's expression of our authentic self.
Yeah.
And we're always running into people and they're like, I'm not creative, I'm not artistic, blah, blah, blah. And I think each and every one of us has something unique and special, whether it's writing, painting, authoring, drawing, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just our job to, you know, explore what those things are, to let go of the attachment to outcome and whether or not we're good at it, and just let it flow and let it go and let it express and be creative. Because as you said, if we're not expressing and if we're not creating, we're stifling our soul. Mm-hmm. And that manifests in very bad ways, whether it's depression, suicidal ideation, or bad health outcomes. Yeah. So as you went through that, did you actually feel like an energetic shift? What was it about deciding to create the love lottery that helped pull you out? If you can go back in time and feel how you were pre, and then part of that journey and that process of what that like expansion felt like and what it did for you?
I mean, I think it ignites a different purpose, a different path, right? So like when you're in a pattern, if you're in a pattern of darkness, a pattern of sad, a pattern of whatever that is, you have to break the pattern somehow.
Yep.
And that can look different to so many people. So me just focusing on my creativity brought me out of the real sorrows of life. And it brought me into an imagination state, right? Of what could I do with this? What could it become? What if? And when you're in a pattern of sorrow, you already know what your next day looks like.
Yeah.
You've already figured it out.
You've determined your outcomes.
Today is, man, tomorrow's going to be just like today. It's sad. It's what it's. Mm-hmm. So I think allowing yourself to expand past what you know or what you perceive to know opens the door of new possibilities, new imagined outcomes, right? And so even though it's little, it becomes big.
It plants a seed of opportunity. It plants a seed of optimism.
Yes.
Oh, maybe tomorrow can be better than today. Maybe this isn't forever.
Yeah.
And the best that I felt isn't the best that I can feel.
Yeah.
That optimism and positivity and hope.
Yeah.
There's nothing more powerful in this world than hope.
Yeah.
And when we're giving a true piece of our authentic selves through the expression of creativity.
Yeah.
And possibly seeing positive results and outcomes from that is really powerful. I feel like I cut you off. I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. It's all good conversation. I feel like we can circle back around on what needs to pick up. But I think, look at this little cutie. You're fine.
We had a momentary visitor.
Yeah, we did. He was feeling our jive. He wanted to say hi.
I saw the book.
But oh man, squirrel brain.
Yeah,
I did lose it for a second.
Squirrel
brain.
So
now come back.
What would you say is your primary mission with the books that you write?
So in a weird way, I kind of feel like I write more for the adult than I do the child. But there's that inner child in all of us. And I feel like the earlier that we are given opportunities to feel things or plant these seeds, you circle back around. So my hope is that these books will land in the bookshelves in the hearts of shared moments, inspirational, something that they can attach to and feel. And maybe in 15, 20 years, they bring this book back out and it just, they connect to a different, deeper meaning.
They're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Or it promotes that memory of their mom being close to them, their dad being close to them and sharing that shared moment. Like a lot of times, you know, people say when you go through a hard time, you should go back to the things that made you happy in childhood. And I hope that these plant little seeds of happiness that people can revisit.
Yeah, it's like we're entering winter right now, right? What happens in winter, at least in Colorado, we get a lot of snow.
Yeah.
And so your book is a little bit like for the youth, you're going out there with a shovel and clearing the path so they can keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Life tends to jade and dissuade us from our positive, optimistic selves.
Yeah.
It beats us down and convinces us that our hopes and dreams aren't possible or that we're not good enough for them. And books like yours and The Dream Achiever go out with a snow shovel or a plow and continue to part the seas to continue help them down their path. And for the adult, it's like, come on back. Like you remember what it was like when you felt all things were possible.
Yeah.
You know, when I talk about The Dream Achiever, when I do workshops or whatever, I originally thought that I was writing it for 10 to 16 year old kids. So they would imagine all of their possibilities and continue to move towards it. It's interesting to me that when I share The Dream Achiever, I've got women in their 50s that are bawling, just sobbing in tears. And they're like, I had no idea how many of my dreams I had set on a shelf, forgotten for 20, 30 years as I stepped into the role of being mom, being caregiver, being breadwinner or whatever, and put all that aside for so long, and how deeply that actually hurts. Literally waterboarding our souls, stifling our creativity and prohibiting our expression of who we're meant to be. And how deeply that hurts. I love that you're on the mission to help keep kids on the path and help remind adults of what's possible. Do you have a favorite stanza or a few pages from Imagine a World that really speak to you most?
I mean, I truly love all the I feel like even if you were just curious and you just flipped open.
I love that exercise.
To a page. You could just read one page and get valuable input from all of it. Like every artist is different. And also something I kind of skimmed over. I think the coolest thing about this book is it was written backwards. And what I mean by that is we came up with the concept. We came up with the idea and we didn't have all the hows, whys. We didn't even have the book written. It was just the concept of what we wanted to create. And so what we came up with, Heather and I, we came up with a list of really intentional words, harmony, freedom, friendship, treasures, like all these things that people can pull from. And then what we did is we hired people we felt connected to, somebody that we really loved their art. We had a story from, you know, heart with them. I actually, a lot of my illustrators that I had done previous books with, I brought them along on this project as well. And so what we did is gave them a list of words to choose from. And then they chose their word. And we told them, you have complete freedom to do whatever you want, however you want to portray that word. You know, it just has to be kid friendly, but however you want to write it or draw it.
We do, you know,
But we didn't give them any restrictions because I know being a creative person, I don't do well in a box. When people start giving me it should be this and it has to do this, what they're doing is actually limiting how far I can go. And so I didn't want to do that for my illustrators. So each person did their own piece.
They let their heart call forth.
Yes. And then we put all the pieces together and wrote the book after we had bought all the illustrations.
Genius.
Yeah.
It's truly brilliant. So what page did you happen to open up to?
So imagine a world full of harmony, the balance of music, joy, rhythm, and sound. You feel the beat where harmony is found. And this is from
Scott Chills.
Yeah. This is from Ray Hart, who is a brilliant artist. And I actually have a backstory even with Ray.
Okay.
Yeah. So share it. When I was 17 years old, I was working at Holiday Inn, and there was this gentleman staying with us, and he'd come and he'd go, and he just kind of seemed like a little bit of a lost soul. And I was just curious, right? Like, I like to know people.
What's
and
your story?
Yes. So I did. I was like, Ray, what's your story? Why do you live here? Like, what are you doing?
Why are you living in a hotel?
Why are you living in a hotel? Like, just a curious 17-year-old, right? Like, and he said, you know, I'm a little lost right now. I'm trying to figure out my path. I'm an artist. I don't really know what direction I'm going. And this was kind of a landing area for me. Hmm. And I said, I'd love to see some of your work. And so he showed me some of his work, and I actually have some of his pieces in my home, still really? Hung to this day. Even in college, I actually wrote a piece about his work. I wish I still had that. I don't even know where it would be at this point. Hmm. But I wrote just how it organically the colors bled into one another. And I was just moved by his pieces. And so full circle moments, which I love full circle moments where you can bring the past back with like beauty, mm-hmm. right? Not to relive anything sad, but just for beauty. And when we were compiling this together, I reached out to Ray and just asked him if he wanted to be a piece of it. And he was so thankful, so grateful. And I love the piece he offered.
One of my favorite quotes was from Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of England during World War II.
Okay.
The worst time in human history to be the leader of any country, let alone England, right?
Like, yeah.
Bombs going off and he's in the bunkers trying to lead a country through atrocities that we can barely even fathom right now. And Winston Churchill said, I feel as though I'm walking with destiny, that my whole path has prepared me for this moment and this challenge. And it's interesting when we look back and through the rearview mirror, mm-hmm. how many life's experiences have been so divine and serendipitous to set us up perfectly for where we are in this moment. Yep. You know, another favorite quote of mine is from Napoleon Hill. He says, within every setback or difficulty lies a seed of equal or greater success.
Yeah.
Every single thing that happens to us happens for our benefit. And when we look back at where we were and all the things that happened in order to orchestrate our divine success and how we've used this, all the people that have come into our lives and all the opportunities and the things that we've learned and the business relationships and the life experience and the job experience and all the things. And we look back and you're like, I couldn't be here without all that.
Yeah,
I couldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. You couldn't have run two successful crowdfunding campaigns and published now 6 books.
Yeah.
It's like you met Ray.
Yeah.
When you were 17 in a hotel.
Yeah.
And here we are 5 years. No, I'm kidding. a few years later, and he's one of the artists in this beautiful book.
Yeah.
Open up another one.
Okay.
Just randomly close it and open it.
Okay. All right.
I love this exercise. When I need a message and when I'm feeling down, I'll often just pick a book like Marianne Williamson's A Return to Love or something like that. And I'll just flip through and open to a page and I'll know whatever is on that is what I need to hear this day. Yeah. Where are we at?
So this is imagine a world full of possibilities, like millions of stars in the night sky. Infinite possibilities are floating on by. So good. So this gentleman, Kevin, who we actually found online, we found him on Instagram and just kind of crushed on his work. We had reached out to him and he is just such a beautiful soul and so talented. We've never had the privilege of meeting him in person, but I love this and I hope he doesn't mind me sharing a little bit of his story, but I think this is him sitting on top of the world in his little suitcase, He was an orphan. And I think there comes a time that you feel very lost in life, not having a family. And I think his healing came from artists, right? From artistry, from drawing, his passion. And like, it embodies so much emotion in this. And this was, he chose this word and he chose this illustration. And I believe this is his story, looking upon the world, seeing all the possibilities that could be, and his little suitcase of where he's going to travel next to. And it just, it's beautiful. It's touching.
It was likely that that got him through the dark nights.
Yeah.
You know, as an orphan, I bet it's probably pretty hard to have hope and optimism about a brighter future. So it was probably that word, possibilities, and imagining what he could create, that got him through those challenging times and the crummy situations that I'm sure he had to endure in that experience.
Yeah. And we just actually reached out to him on another book that we're working on called The Animal World, where we're going to do kind of a similar thing, where we hire a bunch of different illustrators and then give them a group of animals for them to draw however they want. And he just shared with us that he is publishing his first book that he he illustrated and wrote.
Nice.
Which is just cool. It's nice. So I love success stories. I just love them. I can hear them from anybody, because everybody has a different one and everybody has a different story or what they overcame. You know, no doubt there's little seeds of like, oh my gosh, this happened for purpose, but we also had to overcome so much to find our purpose.
Right.
And, you know, one thing, just being like a completely, you know, authentic, open person, is I actually really struggled in school. I was not an A+ student. I think there's English teachers that would probably be like flabbergasted that I have published books.
You're a published author. How is that possible?
Right. Like, it,
I remember you.
Right. But it's like, I had to overcome weaknesses to find my strengths. And I realized that you don't have to be good at everything. You just have to know and honor what your weaknesses are. And I realized I could hire them. I could hire my weaknesses as an editor and an illustrator. I joke and tell people I'm only half talented because I don't illustrate and write. But once I started hiring my weaknesses, I was determined and unstoppable.
When you follow your passion and you do the right things for the right reasons, you can't help but succeed.
Yeah.
You know, when we listen to our intuition, when we follow our soul's calling, and we keep moving forward, just one step after another, even if they're small, incremental, little growth steps, you can't help but end up where you're meant to be.
Yep.
And that always leads to success. When you do the right things for the right reasons, you can't help but succeed. One of the challenges, and I wanted to ask you this, what do you think the biggest challenge we face as a society is today?
Believing what we've been programmed to believe.
Elaborate.
I think so many people just take things for face value rather than find out what the truth is within. Okay. Right? What are you good at? A lot of people struggle with that, probably because they have the programming of all the people that told them on all the things they sucked at. And that became their truth, some sad truth along the way. And I mean, it's sad, but I think there's a lot more fear that keeps us restricted and keeps us away from faith in ourselves. It doesn't even have to be, you know, a God thing. It could just be faith in ourselves. I think we've been fed so much fear that it's kept us from all of our possibilities, all of our potential.
What sort of fears?
I mean, I don't think I ever really truly knew fear until I became a mom. And the debilitating fear of how do you keep your kids safe in this world? are crippling. I mean, you're constantly, or not you, me, this is me as projecting a parent, my truth.
One is like, constantly.
Like I was constantly in fight or flight. I felt like the world didn't feel safe. Like I couldn't do this without keeping 100% eyes. And not that there's truth in that, but it's not as big of truth as we gave it merit to. There are beautiful people out here. There are beautiful people in the world. And I think sometimes we forget all the beauty when we get so focused on fear and our responsibilities, and they just paralyze us.
And the 24-hour news cycle doesn't help.
No.
And you have two boys?
I have two boys.
I'm so sorry. I hope they don't end up like me. I put my parents through unbelievable torture and trauma. I was that kid that was jumping off roofs and climbing, 60-foot trees and walking out on branches like I was a monkey and riding motorcycles, skateboards, mountain bikes, you name it. So bless you.
Yeah. I mean,
I understand the fear. It really puts to test our faith. You know, if we believe that all things happen for good and we believe in the power of a higher force, then it gives us an opportunity to alibi or to step back and say, I'm putting it in your hands.
Yeah.
And I trust that everything is going to work out, because you can't control all outcomes.
No.
You can't, no matter how much you helicopter and hover, you can't protect them and you can't protect one, let alone two running around crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you can't protect them 24 hours a day, and sooner or later they're going to be out in life without you anyway. So to be able to step back and lean into faith, whether it's faith in yourself when you're embarking on a journey to be an author, a publisher, start a business, start a family, whatever, or the faith in the universe or God or whoever you believe in is going to take care of you and your family and your loved ones and your children to really examine, what is it that I truly believe in? Do I believe in the only thing that I can rely on is myself, and that I have to take care of everything, that I have to be in control and that I can control the outcomes? Or do I believe in a higher power? Do I believe that something else is looking out for us, that even when bad things happen, they're for our good, and there's ultimately nothing that I can do about it? So step back. Jesus, take the wheel, as you were. I definitely agree that the greatest challenge that we face, or one of the greatest challenges that we face as a society, is belief. What's the antidote? Aside from turning off CNN and listening to that little negative, that what my friend used to call the itty bitty shitty committee, that negative voice in the back of our head that says that you're not smart enough, you're not attractive enough, you're not successful enough, that little thing that's always telling you that you'll never succeed, you're not worthy of success. MIT once did a study that if one person comes along and tells you you can't do something or you're not good enough to do something, 17 people have to come along and tell you you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, just to get back to equilibrium. So in your estimation, in conjunction with books like Imagine a World or Dream Achiever and surrounding yourself with good people, what do you say is an antidote to that belief?
I mean, I think you have to get so quiet and in your own self that you pay attention to everything you're saying. And then you make a decision in that moment. Is that the thoughts that I want to project my future with?
Is that the truth?
Is that the truth I want to believe?
Mm.
Is that, because I think you can change your truth over time. Mm. You can even have a conversation with your own thoughts and say, I don't choose to believe that anymore. My truth has changed a little bit. Mm. Even if it's changed a little bit, once you start changing your truth, the world changes. And once you start listening to things that propel you on a different mission, it changes. I remember I heard one thing that said that our children are still protected by our ancestors' prayers.
Ooh.
And that hit me.
Nice.
And so I went from feeling constant fear to joining forces with my ancestors and praying over my children. So now, rather than worry, I speak blessings. I hope you have the best day. May you be, divinely guided, like whatever comes to me. But I feel like I'm protecting them with the power of my prayer. And that has given me power over something that used to be debilitating fear.
Hmm. So you suggested that it's the difference between elastic and static. memory, right? So you suggested that we can change our truth. What are some of the dynamics or equations to doing that? How does one possibly open up the door to changing their truth?
You stop projecting your past onto your future, right? Like, truth changes how you allow it to. And I think when you get into that, like, you know how tomorrow's going to go, you're actually doing yourself a disservice unless you have a good mindset.
Yeah, unless you're in that positivity and gratitude loop, then sure, great.
Then you attract more blessings. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to so many different books and people, and sometimes you just get that little golden nugget that you can just tuck into your heart, that you can tuck into your mind, your body, your spirit, and it just feels good. Mm-hmm. And so your truth changes with what you expose yourself to, including what you allow your thoughts to go to.
Yeah, Jim Rohn says that the quality of our life is created by the ingredients we pour into our mental factory.
Yep.
We have to be very careful about what ingredients we're putting into our mental factory. Is it CNN, or Fox News, or the little negative? Yep. Maybe it's our parents or our siblings when we're growing up. I still remember when I was like 6 years old, my mom telling me that I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. I was trying to sing in the backseat of the car, and she was having one of those days where she just needed quiet and having a migraine. She's like, you can't sing. You couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. Mm-hmm. And now I still have, every time I try to get me in front of an open mic on a karaoke night, it ain't going
to
happen.
Come
but
on.
I actually do have a pretty good voice, and I have been told that I'm a good singer. But every time I try, that little voice comes back. You can carry a tune in the bucket. I love that you say get quiet, because one of the greatest gifts that's happened in my life was the time that I got to spend alone in Costa Rica. I've suffered from depression and suicidal ideation and drug addiction throughout my teens and 20s. I've always battled with this little negative voice that tells me I'm not good enough. I call it INGE, the I'm not good enough disease. And it wasn't until I was isolated and alone in a little bungalow during the rainy season in Costa Rica, 40 minutes from the nearest town and 2,000 miles from the nearest friend, without cell service or internet. And I had always known that I had this negative voice. I had always been aware. Like I said, I suffered from suicidal ideation and depression. I actually attempted suicide when I was 17, actually succeeded when I was 18, when I broadsided that pickup truck on the motorcycle. But being in that jungle, isolated in the rain, I had nothing to keep me comfort but the negative voice inside my head. Mm-hmm. And it was loud. Mm-hmm. It was so loud. And for days on end, all I could think about was how I shut that voice up. You know, my first go-to solution during that time was I could wrap that extension cord around the deck and take a short drop with a sudden stop. You know, And then as time went on, I'm like, that's not a solution. That's not where I want to go. So I started, I have to examine this negative self-talk. So I started literally listening to and examining all the things that I was telling myself. I'm not smart enough. Okay, well, you got blah, blah, blah on the ACTs. You got blah, blah, blah on the SATs. You've done this. You've done that. Being really still and examining what is truth and what is that negative self-talk crap that's coming from ego to keep us down and keep us from fully actualizing our highest self is super important. And when we're here, especially in the 21st century in America, when there's always Netflix and Instagram and Pinterest and Facebook and friends to hang out with and places to go volunteer. When I was here, there was always something that I could do to counterbalance that negative voice. If something came up and I was really down, I was feeling like a total piece of shit and I wanted to end myself, I could go hang out with a friend. I could whatever, turn on a movie or go volunteer or go play hockey or something like that. Yeah. And it would get me back to equilibrium. Taking the time to really be still, I mean, really still, and really authentically and vulnerably examine those negative self-thoughts. And ask yourself, how much is this is real and how much is it bullshit?
Well, and one thing just to piggyback on top of that, it's like, you know, energy is real and you can attract things in a certain vibration. And I feel like I'm not alone when you say this, but when you have something hard happen or a negative thought, guess what comes in?
More
like you just start like things that you hadn't thought about in years that make you sad, or the unfair, or like, God, if I didn't go through this and this happened to me, and like, it's just this, it's like this negative thought magnet, that stuff that you hadn't heard about or thought about in so long. And I like to micro and macro things, right? Mm-hmm. I like to bring things small and bring things big, and it gives me a different perspective.
Interesting.
And so I feel like if that's going on internally, and we're all energy, and then you macro it out, what are you giving yourself access to? Mm-hmm. If energy and darkness and light and all this stuff is real, and you're in a dark period, what are you inviting in? And when you start to elevate and get happier, I mean, I'm not alone in this. I don't think you start to collect more happy thoughts. You start to jive in a more happy way. What are you exposing yourself to? I like to think that you're now accessible to a higher energy outside of us on a macro level. And, you know, there was a spiritual book that I heard one time that said, you know, dear loved one, when we see you suffer, it's not that we don't care. We cannot reach you during your times of sadness. You can't even feel us. You can't hear us.
We're there, but you can't hear it.
And I'm like, wow. And that's why it's so important to raise our own energetic vibration, so you have access to that love and light that's around us all.
Michaela's watching. She said, wow, that's powerful. I literally get chills. Like, we've all had that instance where you're thinking, I haven't had an ear infection since I was like 14. And a week later, we get an ear infection. We've all had that circumstance arise where I haven't talked to my friend Mike in ages. Yeah. And then he calls you on the phone that day. Yeah. Like, I don't care what we believe in as far as the law of attraction, but there's little things that do show up in our lives to exemplify that this is real, and that we can have an influence over the life that we choose to create. I love that. I totally got derailed.
Sorry. I
got squirrel.
Left turn, right turn.
So the antidote is being still, choosing what we pour into our mental factory. And yes, that's what could you expand a little bit more on the micro versus macro? It's relevant to you, and I know it makes sense to you, but I'm not sure that I get the full vision or picture of what you mean.
Okay,
by
so
that.
Here's an. I'll give you another example. Okay. I feel like examples are amazing.
Perfect.
So, I'm a parent, and I know when I do something for my child, and he shows me gratitude, it makes me want to do more of it.
Right, right,
right. Like when this little person's like, "Thanks, Mom," I'm like, "Oh my God, of course, anytime. Right. Yes, yes." And when he's like being grumpy or normal 10-year-old, there's a piece of me that's like, well, I don't want to get you all the toys and do the things if you're not even going to.
You don't appreciate what I just did. Why should I do more?
Right. So that's real. That's my real experience of being a mom in a very packed in way. So then if I macro that out, okay. Why wouldn't it be real? If we're not showing gratitude for things, why would there be more good things coming in if we're not even thankful for what's happening?
If we're all drops from the cosmic pool, and we are part of the universe, then we are a micro expression of that reality, of the truth of how the universe operates.
Yeah.
If that's how it works in interpersonal relationships, then obviously that's the way it works in the universe as well.
Why not?
So micro and macro.
Yeah.
Now that makes total sense.
So I take my little human experience and I'm like, oh, what if I have these big parents or whatever looking after me, and I haven't even said thank you to them?
Holy shit. Yeah.
Right? Like, no wonder. They're probably like, you spoiled little human. I'm not going to do that for you.
And then we look at the entitlement of the world today, and everybody expects everything, and everybody feels like a victim, and the world owes them something. It's exactly that, this not showing appreciation and gratitude for what has happened and all the good that's in life, and always expecting more without showing appreciation. How can you expect better things? And then you feel helpless. What would be a good practice for somebody that is struggling right now?
Okay, so that's hard. And I have these conversations sometimes with just even my family. It's like, you know, when you've been through hard, you get it. You have compassion and love and empathy. And like I'll cry if I talk too deep about it, but it's like, I feel so bad for people that go through hard times because it's real. And how do you get out of that? And I think it truly can be as simple as you allow it to be. And sometimes it's just changing one conversation, one moment, one different action. And all of a sudden, like success, you get to this point of happy and you have no idea how you escaped sad. Because when you're in sad, happiness feels like bullshit.
Yeah.
It does. It feels like made up, like
an alternate universe.
Easy for them. Like nobody knows what I went through. Nobody, like you stay so in here, which is all valid and true. It's like if we just felt what we felt and then loved ourselves, like, I'm so sorry you had to feel that. What can we do now to just invite something micro that maybe someday will turn into huge?
What seed can I plant today that might sprout and bear fruit?
Yeah.
Planting a seed of optimism, planting a seed of possibility.
And it seems impossible when you're in it. But then one day you get so far out of it, it's like, oh God, I'd never go back there. And then you start to feel your thoughts before they become a reality.
Right? Before you fall into that Mobius strip of negativity.
Before you give darkness access to you, right? Like it's
the good wolf, bad wolf scenario. Like you've heard that analogy, right? Like the grandfather and his son are going for the walk, and the grandfather's like, in our minds, there's always a good wolf and a bad wolf, and they're always constantly fighting. And the grandson's like, well, which one wins, grandpa? And
which one you feed?
Whichever one you feed.
Yeah.
Pay attention to the ingredients.
So, I mean, it's simplicity. I feel like I remember having a shift. And what I said to one of my friends was like, I just feel like simplicity is becoming so profound for the first time in my life, because I always made things feel bigger, right? And when I just started focusing on simple, minute, micro things, the profoundness of it all starts to accumulate, and then it changes.
For me, it goes back to what you said earlier about getting still. When I get still, whether that's through meditation, grounding, being out in nature, when I get really still, I can feel or sense whether I'm in the flow.
Okay.
And we're all fish swimming.
Yeah.
We have a choice whether or not we want to be the salmon during spawning and use every ounce of every bit of energy and deplete ourselves trying to swim upstream, or whether or not we want to get still and ask ourselves, am I in the flow and going with the divine nature and what is meant to be, the orchestrated divinity of the universe? Like, am I in flow doing what I'm supposed to be doing, with whom I'm supposed to be doing it, on the path towards my greatest good? Or am I bashing my head against the wall, being that salmon, exerting my will against the universe? We all know what happens to the salmon.
But we're both.
We're very good at being both.
We take turns being different fish.
Most of my success in life has come from that. Not most of, it's a fair amount, 50-50. Now, I'm very good at being the salmon. When I choose that I'm going to get somewhere, I will die on that hill. I will make sure that I end up there. I will do everything that I can to achieve that goal. I've also ended up in some of those most beautiful places with some of the most beautiful people. And I look at the relationship that I'm in now, and every bit of it has just been, I'll go wherever you tell me to go. I will listen. I will be still. When I get a twinge of intuition or motivation, I will follow that, because I know that's part of the divine path and going with flow. And life is so much more fun and so much easier when you're going with that and being simple. That's part of being simple. I think, for me at least. When you define simplicity, what does that mean for you?
I mean, it can mean as easy as just being in a moment, right? Mm-hmm. Just whatever simple moment. It's like, I was so in a hard spot for so long that I had to focus on simplicity in order to find my gratitude again. Like, thank you for brushing your teeth today.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's something so simple, but it made me feel thankful for something mm-hmm. when the day felt so impossible Ominous. And hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's simplicity. And then all of a sudden, it's like profound changes come. Right? Like, it's like people say that, which I don't live by, like, you can change your whole day by making your bed in the morning. You start with that little simple action of just being orderly and neat, and then it follows and trickles throughout the whole day. And I felt like I lived in so much chaos for so mm-hmm. long that I haven't even mastered the making the bed of the morning, but I like it. And I feel like I will come back to that at some mm-hmm. point. And maybe next time we talk, I'll be like, Brian, I'm starting to make my bed.
I made my bed.
But right now I don't, but I love that. I love that something so little can just set your whole day up for like a different experience.
It's a miniature building block.
Yeah.
Right. It's a metaphor for how, and you don't want to go so far down the road that you're trying to control every aspect of your life, that making the bed in the morning turns yeah. you OCD and you have to wash your hands 6 times right. to go out the door. But it's an expression or a metaphor of how one little tiny building block that you can control makes your entire environment feel and look better.
Yeah.
That helps you feel empowered about creating a more positive outcome for the yeah. rest of your day. So whether it's brushing your teeth or making your bed or making a phone call to somebody yeah. that you've been avoiding or something like that, it's yeah. one little building block moving you towards
yeah.
that positive outcome, and helps you feel like, I might not be in control, but I do have influence, and yeah. that gives me power.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is kind of different, but something that just kind of pinged me is my husband and I were talking the other day, and I was like, you know, I think I understand why the road to hell is paved with good intentions, because you never move from head to heart.
To action.
Because action is your heart. Like, I have some of the best intentions, mm-hmm. right? But it doesn't matter if you don't act on them.
Right.
So your heart is everything. So I don't know. Maybe the bed is like you're bringing thought into action, and maybe it's just connecting the two. Maybe it's connecting your thought and mm-hmm. in your heart. You're putting something into action, because when you're stuck mentally, physically, emotionally. And when you're in motion, even if it's not the door you expected to open, there are things that will open and things that will arise that would have never happened if you didn't just take that step.
Life is Hansel and Gretel. Our job is to walk yeah. around finding the breadcrumbs
yeah.
to follow the path towards where we're meant to be.
Yeah.
Most of us just walk around and we see stuff on the ground and we kick it and we're like, oh, I'm going this yeah. way. And you might end up where you want to be.
Yeah.
But the journey will likely be a lot more fun and a yeah. lot easier if you just follow those breadcrumbs and listen to that intuition. Michaela says, compound interest in gratitude. Lovely.
Yes. Yes.
There was something that I was going to say and I totally spaced it. Oh, well, must not have been important.
Well, it's all important. There's just something more important coming.
Apparently. Yeah. Our job is, I've often said that, you know, I've correlated or related my life to a jigsaw puzzle. You know, okay. what happens when you set out to do a jigsaw puzzle? You open the box, you dump all the pieces over. What's the yeah. very first thing you do when you're starting, most of us, the very first thing we do when we're starting a jigsaw puzzle is we start flipping over pieces.
Okay.
Metaphor for life.
Yeah.
We're flipping over pieces, trying to find all the different yeah. things that we could do. And then the next step, well, yeah. this piece looks like it fits here. And yeah. then you start to build the border, you start to build the foundation, you start to figure out what piece fits where. And that's a choice, whether we're going to Hansel and Gretel and follow the yeah. breadcrumbs towards our inevitable positive future, whether we're going to flip over the pieces. We could flip over the pieces or not. We could choose to put them where they belong or not and see which ones fit or not.
So people that give up never finish their puzzle. Yeah. They never see their masterpiece.
Yep. Yeah.
Because they're all important, right?
Yep.
Even the bad pieces.
The bad pieces.
Yeah,
some of the worst days of my life have turned out to be the best things that happened to me.
Because your perspective changes.
Yeah. I was just talking to you before we started this podcast about, you know, blowing up my LCL in my hockey game. It's like, it's amazing how something like this can bring to perspective how much we take for granted in this world.
Yeah.
You know, just being able to sleep at night.
Yeah.
Being able to get around. I'm trying to work and I'm hobbling around on one leg. In an instant, the things that we take for granted can be changed. And we're like, whoa.
Yeah. But guess what? When your knee heals, guess who's going to be thankful every day?
So much more grateful. Yeah, I get in for that MRI and I get the surgery done and be like playing hockey again here in a year. And be like, oh, yeah, I remember. Have you seen the movie Lucky Number 11?
No.
Oh, my God. It's one of the best. It's the greatest compilation of humor and dialogue and wit. And it's brilliant. But in there, what's his name? Whatever. It doesn't matter. Look it up. It's a great movie. Watch it. The Lucky Number 11. But he says, the lucky are nothing more than a frame of reference for the unlucky.
Okay.
Take yourself, for example. Yesterday, you were a lot better off than you are today, but it took today for you to realize.
Yeah.
That's for all of us, right? Like we're all better off than we think. We just got to change that thing that we're looking at, that Mobius strip, and pay attention to the things that we can control and the outcomes that we can influence and get out of that negative thought process and step into gratitude and get away from the entitlements and the victim mentality and step into an empowered mentality and start thinking about the possibilities of what we can create and the little steps that it takes to build it.
Yeah.
We're just over an hour.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you two final questions. You know, what is the most important lesson that you've learned in life? We've talked a great many things so far and so much positive wisdom is poured through this conversation. And I'm so grateful for you
taking the time to do this.
What is the most influential and powerful lesson that you've learned thus far?
I mean, I feel like there's so many lessons in life, but I think one of the ones that's present is realizing how powerful I am. I think I gave my power away a lot throughout my life. I gave it to other people. I gave it to thoughts that maybe I didn't believe deep on a soul level. I gave it away to things that had happened to me. I gave my power to really whoever wanted it. And I've realized and I've started calling my power back and realizing even in how I speak the things that come to be. Right? So like it's amazing. It's amazing to be here and realize, wow, Leah, you have so much power over your life that you just never, ever realized. And it's different for everybody has their own story, but like simple and cute, like these earrings that I'm wearing today, these are my lucky girl earrings. The other day I went to an event with a girlfriend, just as like a flow. I got invited. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'd like to go out and do something, you know, just out of the norm. And it was called Blingo. And it was like you won jewelry. It was actually really cute. So I sit down at this table with like eight women. And just for fun and just for light, I said, ladies, I don't want to intimidate you, but I'm very good at bingo. I'm very good at bingo. I most likely am going to win. So just don't be jealous. Just I want you to win too, but most likely I'll win. Just being fun, right? And I won the first game at Blingo.
And they're like,
I won my lucky girl earrings. And I was like, that's calling your power back in a way. Like you speak truth into your life and then you let things unfold.
So to expand on that and give our listeners one final nugget, what has been the best way for you to call your power back? What has been that defining, if you can put a finger on it, that defining action or thought or process or whatever that has helped you call your power back?
You reinvent it. You reinvent your connection. You reinvent what empowers you, right? Which is kind of cool because it even, that's part of your name and your, right? So like you reinvent what powers you and you focus on that, because I don't think the universe has a sense of humor. And I don't think they know if you give your energy to sadness, that is truly what it creates. And I think when you reinvent and you realize that you can feel a certain way and then you call more of that, you're calling a different connection of power back to how you want to be and not just living a story of maybe what used to be. And I don't know, I kind of want to share this, but the other day I like doing a lot of word plays, right? So like, I think I shared with you that the word awful used to mean full of awe, and it's changed over time to mean something much different, right?
It's pretty dark and ominous the way the word is used now.
So I wordplay a lot with my writing, which is for fun. And the other day I kind of pulled apart the word history, and I'm like, his story. And I'm like, that's his story, not mine. So I've started saying that if something comes back up, that's like when history repeats itself, I'm like, no, that's his story. Mine's different. I'm finding power in my new story that I'm writing.
And that opens up doors and windows to new possibilities.
Yeah. And there's one thing that I do have on my mind. I don't know if it will come in 20 years or when that will be, but I want to write a book of truth. And then my final chapter, I want to write a chapter of possibility and just see if that comes true.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
This has been such a perfect conversation, as I knew it would be. I've been so excited for this since the moment we met. Is there anything that you, this feels like the perfect, most serendipitous place to close, but is there anything else that you would like to add? Is there any message that you would like to share beyond that?
I mean, I think we all just need to speak to each other. As fragile as possible, because there's the only reason I step forward, I think, is to show people what they're capable of. I'm not special.
Right.
I'm really not. I didn't come from a crazy college background and be introduced to things. And like, I have my own stories of sad and setbacks, but I think my momentum is worth sharing. And I think my positivity can be contagious. And
it as hell is.
But that's what's important. Right. That's how people get inspired and they move past, because I think so many people look at somebody like, yeah, but their story is so different. And it's like, I'm actually sharing my story as it's unfolding.
Right.
Like, I'm not even to where I want to be, but I'm celebrating where I'm at. So I want to empower people, however that looks. If you pulled one thing that I said today that puts you on a path of better possibilities, that's what I want. So I think I want to leave with a blessing to whoever listens to this. May you feel your own empowerment and your strength once more, and just remind yourself of the beauty that's inside, because it is so important not to forget that piece of you that wants to be creative, that wants to be whole, that wants to be healthy, that wants to be empowered again. And I think you can. Let me be that little positive voice that says, you got this.
You're a shining example.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Leah, for your time. This has been a wonderful blessing. This conversation has been phenomenal. Thank you so much. How do people get a hold of you, and what do you have coming up?
Yeah. So I actually have a book signing this weekend in Erie at 33 Boutique. Shields is, I'm kind of working on some book signing, but the little book that I gave you, they're giving this away for their Santa experience, which is amazing. So Shields has this little mini Imagine a World book that they're giving away. And I think I'm going to go do a couple little pop-in signings. LeahHuggins.com is my website, and you can register on there and just be notified of new creative launches. I have a lot of projects. I have more creativity than I know what to do with. So
Sounds like a good problem to have. Are the events, the book signings on your website?
No, I'm not that organized, but someday.
tell us again the date, time, and place.
Yeah, so noon in Erie at Charmed 33 Boutique. I'll be doing a book signing, and then I'm working with Shields. I think I might be there Saturday or maybe Sunday. I'm so sorry. I'm still working out details. I'm in the flow. I don't have everything.
Well, you're on Facebook, right? Yes, so people can follow you on Facebook. Yeah. What's your Facebook handle?
I think actually it's still under Love Lottery Book. Okay. It's my Facebook. And then my Instagram is Leah Huggins Author.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And if you listeners out there would like us to help share a powerful message of positivity, please smash that like button. Please subscribe and share. It really helps with the algorithm. We've had a wonderful conversation, and I know there's a lot of people out there hurting that need a message of empowerment and positivity like this, and all the blessings that Leah has shared in our conversation today. So please help us get this out there. I love and appreciate you all. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll stay tuned for the next one. Thank you so much for listening to today's interview. I hope there's something in there that inspired you. I hope you're feeling empowered and awed, and something spoke to your soul and resonated with your heart. If you're interested in contacting today's guest, please check the show notes, follow him on Facebook, or send him an email. As always, please subscribe, rate, and review, and share this podcast with anybody that you know that might benefit from its message. This has been BC from A World Empowered, wishing you the very best. I love you all. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.